Lana's helping Lex study the black ship.
She got a detailed drawing from Luther Corps. She's been lying to me for weeks.
Well, you haven't exactly been honest with her either, Clark. Sometimes the truth isn't easy to share with the one you love, especially if you think it might hurt them.
It's just everything was so perfect with Lana when I lost my abilities. Now I have them back. All I do is lie to her about the ship, about why I can't. Just wish I could tell her.
Well, I'm not saying you should, but Pete found out the truth and Chloe, and they accepted you for who you are.
Yeah, that I'm an alien.
No, as their friend whom they love very much, no matter what star you were born under.
I'm just not sure Lana's going to feel the same way.
Maybe she's not the one you were meant to be with.
Mom, I can't imagine loving anyone else.
Somebody save me indeed. Hello and welcome to Farm to Fable, a Smallville Rewatch fancast. I am your forever host, Michael, and I'm also the host of the RPG Academy podcast, where I talk mostly about role-playing games, but all tabletop gaming in general. I also organize a three-day gaming convention held in Dayton, Ohio each November. Before we get started, please be advised that Farm to Fable may include adult language and reference adult behavior. Please consider us PG-13 in regards to content acceptability for your young ones. Also, this is your spoiler warning. While we will focus on each episode week to week, our discussions may and likely will reference the entire series run and the wider Superman mythos. You can email our show at smallvillefancast@gmail.com with any comments, concerns, or questions. Please follow us on Twitter at Farm2Fable. And join our Facebook group page at Smallville Farm to Fable. With all of that out of the way, let's meet today's co-host.
Hey, it's me, Neil. I'm back. Because I can't not come back. Also, if I don't come back, then I won't watch Smallville. Just so we're clear, this is how this exchange of back and forth works. You tell me which episode I'm going to be on. I catch up, and then I kind of wait until I find out the next episode.
So it is exciting to see, you know, to get this from you. So we'll do a bit of an update. So you're now current through season 5, episode 11. What are you thinking so far? How's season 5 working for you?
Okay. I will admit, because I know what happens in the next episode, I watched the next episode. So I'm up through 12 just because of the things that happen in 12. But in terms of season 5, what's really interesting to me is it feels like they're trying to make the show again, and I don't know that's good or bad. I think they're trying to find their footing with the fact that nobody's in high school anymore. It's almost like they're having to, like, in some subtle ways, reinvent the show because you started with this plan of we're all in high school, and then we're all out of high school, and just in the same way that everyone, once they graduate, like, what do I do with the rest of my life? Almost feels like Smallville is trying to figure that same question out of, like, okay, they're all actual adults. The world is their oyster. They're not going to all go to the same location every time. What do we do? So that's kind of the general vibe that I've gotten in shaking up those relationships and, like, where people are going to end up and things like that. So I'm excited to see where it goes because I'm not 100% sure where it's trying to go.
Well, again, I'm excited to check in with you each time to see how you're feeling. But with that, we're going to jump into the show proper. We're going to start with our pass the torch question, and this comes from Colin. So we're right in the middle of the senatorial campaign between Jonathan Kent and Lex Luthor. And we looked back at their campaign slogans, and Jonathan's was bringing Kansas back, and Lex's is looking to the future. So Colin wanted to know, what do you think either or both of these candidates' campaign promises might have been when they're out campaigning? What are the things that they're saying we're going to do or I'm going to do that they know they probably can't actually do because, you know, it's politician speak? But do you have any one or any two for either candidate or both that you think promises they might have been making on the campaign trail to get elected?
Yeah, so my first thought was, I don't feel like Jonathan would have intentionally lied. But given that it is him and Lois as his campaign manager, I think they absolutely lied about things that they think they could do because they would just rightfully, they had no idea what a person could actually do with, like, that seat. So I think that there would just be these like handshake promises with individuals. That's just absolutely not a thing that Jonathan could do. I think he would make individual promises, and it's like, well, that's, I mean, yeah, that's just you. That's not the Senate seat saying yes. And so I think he would just have this myriad of deals with individuals of like, I could do that for you. And it's like, no, but you can't. That's not how this works at all. So that's my number one, was I just think Jonathan would just be himself, and then ultimately not be able to do any of the things he promised individual people, not like the constituents as a whole.
Mm. All right. Anything for Lex?
I think with the future thing, I think it would just be that he would promise these technological advances, and I think he would do them, but I don't think they would turn out anywhere near the way they were. Because previously, you know, the more evil Lex was like, oh yeah, we've got this cool weapon. I don't care that it kills all the fish and everything around it.
Right.
So I think he would do all of these technological advances, but I don't think they would go very well. And I also don't think that they would be for the people of Kansas. I think they would just be for Lex Luthor.
Probably. So, you know, again, I thought about this for a little while. I feel like Jonathan's clearly the conservative of the two, even though I generally think that Clark Kent as a character and Superman as a character would lean liberal in their political stance. I think Jonathan is a pretty staunch conservative, maybe a caring conservative. So I think he's going to try to bring back family values, you know, dinner around the table, honest days pay for an honest day's work, corn subsidies. Like, he's definitely going to be like, we're going to bring Kansas. Smallville will be the cream corn capital of the world once again. And I think he's really going to focus hard on those messages. I think Lex would lean into like the meteor freak. Like, you know, we have all these people with powers running around. Like, I've been shot 17 times. There's like people that have shapeshifted into me. So we're going to get some military contractors in here. We're going to set up some additional bases. We're going to bring in tax revenue and government subsidies to get more people here, study these meteors and take care of these meteor freaks that are affecting our lives. And I kind of feel like that's a message that might get some traction in Smallville. Maybe not Kansas as a whole, but Smallville. Yes.
Yeah. The whole direction I thought you were going was like, Lex is like, I've got a meteor power for everyone.
You get a power and you get a power.
Yeah.
Awesome. All right. So with that out of the way, we're going to grab a copy of this week's Daily Planet, check the bylines and see who brought us this episode.
I mean, that's a story that could land you a byline on the front page of the Daily Planet.
So we're here today to discuss Season 5, Episode 11, Lockdown. The date of original airing was January 19th, 2006. The character Superman was created by Jerry Siegel and Joe Shuster, and Smallville was created by Alfred Goff and Miles Miller. The writer for this episode was Stephen S. DeKnight.
And the director for this episode is Peter Ellis, and this is his one and only episode.
So now let's open our Smallville yearbook and see who our notable guest stars are.
Get me a yearbook.
We have Kevin Daniels as Greg Flynn and Sarah Lynn as Deputy Harris.
And we also have Camille Mitchell in her final appearance as Sheriff Nancy Adams. Alrighty, so Neil, are you ready to enter the Fortress of Solitude, the repository for all the knowledge of the known universe as collected by the Kryptonians, to get a glimpse of where we came from as well as where we may be going?
Absolutely. I have my jacket and scarf. I'm ready.
Fantastic. If you don't mind, we'll read that summary, please.
The two police officers who witnessed the spaceship landing during the meteor shower take Lex and Lana hostage and threaten to kill them unless Lex reveals where he hid the spaceship.
And that's great and all, but it doesn't tell us what we really need to know. So let's examine some additional crystals and ask the important questions. Does this episode feature a vehicle crashed or otherwise destroyed?
No, but a previously crashed one is shown, which I think is amazing. Yes. We will definitely talk about it.
Does this episode feature someone fallen unconscious for any reason?
Absolutely.
Does this episode feature someone in a hospital bed?
Yes.
Does this episode feature Clark telling or showing someone besides his forever crush Lana or the destined love of his life, Lois Lane, his powers and abilities?
Basically, the sheriff has to know at this point. Has to.
So follow up. Does that person die, lose their memory, or otherwise become unable to share this knowledge, or do they become a confidant of Clark?
They die.
Does this episode feature Clark using his powers irresponsibly?
Absolutely.
Does Clark casually break and enter a business or residence?
Yes. Surprise.
Does this episode feature a moment where a character travels a seemingly long way to have a short conversation and then leave?
Yes. Even more so now that he's told Chloe, now it's just like, oh, I'll just run wherever I need to and talk to you and then just leave.
Yeah. Texting, you know, could solve the same thing.
Yep.
Does this episode feature a conversation between two people where one person has their back to the other and is weirdly talking over their shoulder?
Yes.
Was the person talking weirdly over their shoulder Lex?
No, which is always weird.
Yeah, there's like this one half-hearted semi over the shoulder, but we got several people doing it this week, but I don't think Lex does. Does this episode feature a particularly thirsty moment for one or more of our characters?
No.
Does this episode feature a cheeky bit of dialogue that hints at or directly references the wider Superman mythos?
No.
Does this episode feature a moment with a needle drop wearing a contemporary song perfectly sums up a character's thoughts and desires?
No.
Actually, I don't think there's a needle drop in this episode.
I don't. And I always have theories about when a person directs a single episode, oftentimes there's more no than there is yes.
Interesting. And finally, does this episode feature classic Smallville leap of logic wherein the characters jump to a correct conclusion around who or what is behind some mysterious event or otherwise solves a problem with little to no actual information to base such conclusions?
Yes.
Absolutely. So now that we have a clearer roadmap of where we're going, let's use our X-ray vision and look closely at this week's episode. So in our cold open, a week before the election, Jonathan and Lex are neck and neck in the polls. A former deputy sheriff and a current deputy sheriff arrive and try to evac Lex for a supposed bomb threat, but quickly reveal themselves, or at least one of them, to be a former deputy. Lex's campaign manager plays the hero and gets killed for it. Lex dives into his panic room and learns he's trapped and that these two want the spaceship Lex has claimed after the second meteor shower. All right, so cold open, what do you want to talk about?
The scene where the campaign manager throws something and runs, it's just weird. I think not throwing something would have been better for me. I just don't understand the things that happened because one, Lex does admit needing better security, which is a great admission. I don't think that'll change. I assume it doesn't change, but it's a really good note to have that you do feel that way because you just let these people in. I think it works though because the sheriff, you know, they're sheriffs, and the fact that they would just be let in seems to work. But also, after you've shot someone, was there no one else in the whole mansion? Was my other thought. But
yeah, so he does mention that the security team is tied up downstairs, but like, is there not a maid or a butler or a chef or a groundskeeper? Like, apparently no one works in the mansion except for Lex and one or two security people.
Or like the forethought, because, you know, because we'll get into it where they cut the hard line for the house. So then like, that's not working. No one noticed that prior at all for any particular reason. No. Okay.
Nope. Yeah, it's a little bit weird. I do think there's some interesting stuff here with, like, Lex now has set up a panic room in what used to be his sort of vault, and we're going to learn more about that. And he now has cameras. Like, mm-hmm. It's season 5, and he finally has cameras in his office.
Yep.
But I think that this was supposed to show how carefully Flynn had planned this out, that he knows where the cameras are because the cameras are new. And they're hidden behind that mask. And then when he goes up and shoots it, I think that's to let us know that, okay, he knows what he's doing. He's thought this through. He knows that there's cameras. He knows where the cameras are. So I think this is to give us confidence that he is confident in whatever it is he's trying to do.
Yeah.
They know about the spaceship, obviously, and they want information on the spaceship, which is why they're there. But a question I ask later, but I will pose to you now. In a different movie, Flynn would be the hero. Like, he is an officer who was at a tragic event where everyone else he worked with, all his friends and colleagues, were brutally killed by this invading alien force. And then Lex, probably with the assistance of some government agencies, came in, stole the spaceship, and just covered it all up. And he's the one guy out there saying, no, there are aliens. They're killing people. And yes, he becomes a domestic terrorist because of the way he goes about it, but he tried to do it the right way and people labeled him as crazy. He lost his job. He got put in a psych program. He's not the bad guy.
No, by any stretch. Even when he admits, like, you left me, you didn't even look to see if anyone else was alive. I lived by pure happenstance, because it definitely wasn't you. One of the things that I can't tell if I, you know, the question you like to ask sometimes is it good writing or bad writing? Is the one thing that kind of tripped me up once I was done with the episode was why I didn't know that was his fiance until deep into the episode, because I was confused as to why both of these people were here.
Yeah,
because I really understood why he was there, and also like that she trusted him so much with this story that he told, that she believed him, was also a really interesting piece. I wish there was just like a little bit more about their relationship. Yeah. I think it totally worked overall.
I'm betting that was a studio note, because it's just sort of a, and he's my fiance, just kind of like, just in case we were confused as to why she was there. Yep. Yeah. But I mean, don't get me wrong. He does kill the campaign manager. She kills the sheriff later.
Yeah.
They're not good people. But you could reframe this whole situation very easily. Lex is the bad guy, and this is the underdog who's trying to fight power and has to do terrible things to show the world what's going on. I mean, you could float this like a Star Wars sort of situation. They're the rebels. They are right, but they are having to take extreme measures against this evil tyrannical force. Not quite there, but I just found it interesting that I was like, I don't know that I don't want him killing people, but he's kind of the underdog hero in a way.
Yeah. Well, and like you said, that different path was, if anyone had started to really believe him, then you have a person that's not pushed that far out on the edge, because now you've lost your, you know, you lost your livelihood. You've lost basically the trust of anyone that you hold dear, probably, because you keep telling them that you saw a spaceship and people get out of it. So,
right.
Yeah, that's a tough go. And the prosthetics for the hand, I thought it was pretty well done. And someone felt pretty good about it, because we really looked at it. We really looked at it in that episode, just like that long pan shot. I'm like, okay, yeah, we see it. I get it.
Yep, I get it. All right, so let's move into the first act. If you don't mind, will you read that summary, please?
Clark and Lana's relationship is crumbling over intimacy issues, exasperated by Clark's lying about why. Clark learns Lana has been working with Lex, studying the spaceship. The two officers confront Lex on knowledge of the spaceship. Clark confides to Martha about his relationship issues in a non-specific way. Lois shows up to go over campaign stuff with Jonathan, prompting him to ask about funds, but she deflects. Lana is used as bait to get Lex out of the panic room. Lana and Lex manage to get back inside, but Lex is shot in the process.
So I will note that I do write these summaries as I go, and I was confused at points as to who was who. So I think I refer to them as officers when technically he's a former officer, but she's still. We know we're talking about. It's Harrison Flynn.
Yep.
So I do have a good writing, bad writing question for you. I love when you're here, because I always try to find those, and I have one. I'm interested in your thoughts on it. But this first scene I found it a little bit difficult to watch, because they're there and Lana's like, when you invited me over for a study date, you actually meant studying, huh? And then she's like, kiss me. And then he does this really like chase sort of like kiss. And she's like, am I your cousin? Kiss me. And then he's like, I got to go. And it's just, again, I know you have been watching, you can see where this is leading up to, that just last episode, they kind of reset their relationship because Clark feels like he cannot have a intimate relationship with her. And he has to lie about it because he can't explain why, because he has powers. He's afraid he'll kill her in the process. She doesn't understand. She just thinks all of a sudden he doesn't find her attractive or doesn't want to be intimate with her. And it's destroying the relationship. The whole thing was just, it was not like badly acted. It's just, I found it like difficult to watch.
Yeah, it was uncomfortable. It's uncomfortable because we are basically seeing a relationship fall apart. And if it's well acted, it doesn't feel good to watch it. I mean,
because
you think back to all the times that you may or may not have experienced anything even remotely close to it. But it also like really did feel like it walked that line of like, I can't tell if this is good or is this bad. I think the earlier parts were a little bad. But I think the final parts of like that discussion of just like, okay, so then what are we, you know, like that exasperated. What are we doing? What are we doing? The whole point of this was we said we both wouldn't lie to each other. And then we both know we're both definitely lying to each other.
Right. And, you know, that's one of the things that I would continue to see with this show is that Clark is continually lying to almost everybody with good reason. I understand in his position, it's a white lie. He's not trying to hurt anybody. He's trying to protect them because he feels like, hey, if you know my secret, A, it could destroy our relationship, but it could also put you in danger. Very similar to how we see, you know, the Lex Lana thing. It's a perfect parallel. Lex did share with Lana and it put her in danger. But he then expects everyone to be 100% honest with him about everything all the time. And he doesn't have a leg to stand on there.
Yeah, especially. Yeah. Well, and especially in, I think, this instance, I think Lana is choosing to do it for a lot of the same reasons of like, look, I know you and Lex used to be really good friends. I know that's not necessarily the case. But at the end of the day, he's very interested in finding out the answers to this thing. And so am I. And last time I checked, it's kind of fun to have somebody with the last name Luther backing a project I'm interested in.
Yeah.
Because they do a great job at least funding it.
Yeah, the craft services is top notch. And,
yeah.
And travel, you know, again, the private jet to China and back sometimes.
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
Yeah, things happen. But I think there's an interesting parallel here between Lana and Flynn, because she was also there the day of the spaceship. She also was gaslit by Luther for a while. And he said, I don't know what you're talking about. He stole the spaceship. And, you know, they try to claim that that's not what happened. And because of factors with Clark lying and her, I think she even says, you know, like ICE was there. I saw them come out. I saw those people died. And you're telling me it's not important. So she has sort of this righteous anger that has driven her to Lex for answers. That's exactly what Flynn is doing. I mean, it's not the romantic angle or the friendship angle, but it's basically the parallel storyline. They both were there. They both were being lied to. No one was listening to them. And they use the powers that they have, Lana, her friendship with Lex, and Flynn, his knowledge and his relationship with his fiance, to get to Lex to try to get the truth out of him.
Yeah. And it's interesting because it's always fun to have these conversations, because sometimes in the conversation, I'll think of things that I had not yet thought of. Clark is protecting his secret so desperately that I find it interesting that he's not more invested in also finding out the answers of this spaceship that clearly could give him more answers.
Mm-hmm.
Like answer, because it's not like he has all of the answers. Yes, he has the Fortress of Solitude, but you know that in so many ways that is kind of one person's perspective on Krypton. So getting more information from a different angle is, I don't know why that wouldn't be something you're interested in,
yeah,
Clark.
Yeah, I agree. I think that's, I don't want to say it's a character flaw. It's probably just a writing flaw. It's the nature of the beast of this type of story. But Clark's just willful ignorance over the spaceship is self-defeating. Like you said, if he was out there looking for it, like why doesn't he go to the Fortress of Solitude and ask the, you know, whatever that version of Jor-El is there, like, hey, can you help me find the spaceship? What can you tell me about it? I have people in my life who want to know, and if I can help them find the right parts of the right answers but avoid the parts I don't want them to, then that might be a better avenue for him keeping a secret. But by just trying to be like, oh, it doesn't matter, it's not important, I'm not sure it even exists, maybe you're wrong, that's just going to force them further away, which, I mean, I think last episode, Chloe said it specifically. If you don't tell Lana the truth, you're going to get her forced to ask the right questions to the wrong people. And that's exactly what's happening.
Yeah. Well, and like you said, that parallel of Lana and Flynn also comes up of just both of them being like, that's cool. You say it's not a big deal. We both saw it. Like,
yeah,
it's unquestionable. The thing was there. I saw it with my own two eyes. I need more answers, or at least I need to know that I can't find out more.
Yeah.
But I gotta invest at least some of my person into this task because I saw it with
it changed their life irrevocably. Yeah.
Yep.
Irrevocably. They can't just let it go at this point. So anyway, so they're there. They're trying to, basically they're saying we want the spaceship. Lex is lying. Like, I don't know what you're talking about. So we're at the mansion now. Sorry. Yep. So I jumped ahead. So Clark finds out that Lana has been studying the spaceship because she's got some papers in her backpack or whatever, blah, blah, blah. So we go to the mansion, and this is where basically we're learning out their plot. We were there, or I was there. I saw it. I want the truth. And Lex is lying to him about it. He's like, I don't remember. And he sees something in like a reflection off of something through the cameras. He sees like a light kind of going up and down. And we figure out that he figured out that this was the Wi-Fi scrambler that Flynn was using to keep Lex from being able to call out for help on his cell phone or from, you know, inside the panic room, whatever, because later this is going to become important. But essentially it says we're at a stalemate because you can't get in here. This thing is like strong enough to withstand a nuclear blast, and I'm not going to come out there. So we're at a stalemate.
Looks like we have ourselves a stalemate.
Well, I guess I'll have to find a way to break it.
And then we cut scenes, and the first thing we see, or the first thing we hear, is the word Lana. Martha, it's the scene that we did as our cold open. Martha saying, Lana has been studying. So we have to find a way to break it. We cut immediately to her saying Lana. I think that's a very clear setup. It's foreshadowing. Now, we did all the dialogue on that scene already, and it ends with Clark very seriously saying, Mom, I can't imagine ever loving anyone else. And what we don't have in the scene we did is that's when Lois shows up. So my question for you, is it good writing or is it bad writing to have two instances of like that perfect foreshadowing beginning and ending of that scene? So we have the, we're going to find a way to find it, Lana being the very first thing we hear, and I can't imagine loving anyone else, Lois shows up. Do you think that's good or bad writing?
Yeah, I think the first one is good and the second one was way too heavy. Like, because I think those... If it's at the second layer, I think it works a little better, which like the Lana one is kind of at that second layer because it's just part of the dialogue. You may not really realize it until you've watched the episode once and you're watching it a second time, where the second one literally just drives over you and it's like, oh yeah, don't forget Lois because your relationship is failing. Don't forget we have Lois here. Yeah. And you're like, oh no, okay. I mean, yeah, I know Lois is here. I mean, also she's still the campaign manager, which is so funny.
We talked about that last episode. Yeah. She has absolutely no business in that role, but she does a good job. So maybe, again, maybe the right person did get the position after.
Hey, I believe it. It worked.
Yeah.
But yeah, like I said, the first one I think is good. The second one, way too heavy.
All right. So I'll make this my call out to the audience. Dear listener, what do you think? Did you think that was sort of a funny, like, oh, I get it sort of thing? Did it go over your head? I mean, again, I watched the episode 3 times. I probably wouldn't have caught it either. Or do you think it's good or bad writing? You can email the show, smallvillefancast@gmail.com. This is also the scene where we get to see the previously destroyed truck you mentioned, the truck that Clark rolled like 3 or 4 episodes back. Mm-hmm. It's still in the yard. It looks like they're trying to fix it, I guess. I don't know, had it towed there and it's just parked.
So... I have so many theories about most of this. Like, obviously the idea would be that there are things on that truck that a person could take and put on another truck, but doing that kind of, having done that kind of work before, I don't know what it would be because that truck is absolutely mangled and just a complete mess. So I don't know if that's like the base concept that we're supposed to get from this. Or if like they just didn't have anywhere to take it yet. I don't know. But it just thought it was funny that like it's there. It's in visual range. And he's just, you know, cranking away on the next Dodge he got that he's going to.
The blue one. He has one, just like Clark's wardrobe. He has a blue one and a red one.
Yeah. And inevitably, I assume it will meet a terrible fate as well.
I do wonder, though, and I don't think the show wants us to think that, but it made me ask the question, is with Clark's strength, could he actually like unbend? Like, I know I couldn't, and probably take it too much. Like, no one, actual mechanic, could probably un-F that truck so much that it could be worked, but Clark could probably straighten all the pieces with all of his strength. I think there's some like tensile strength issues when you bend and like straighten, it probably would not hold up. But I just wonder if that's part of it. They're like, eventually Clark will like pull that out, it'll be fine.
Yeah. I mean, he's gonna crash it anyways. But yeah, as long as Clark's so after it's done, it's not
Clark's safe. The only one that can drive it.
It's not safe for anyone else but Clark to drive. It's just the truck that he has to put back together every time. That could work.
Yeah. I did want to call out here too because we have so many like different levels and parallels and echoes in this episode where
Martha is talking to Clark about Lana not being able to tell him the truth when she herself has keeping this big secret from Jonathan because she has a hard time telling him what she did because she knows that will hurt Jonathan, but she thinks it's for the right reasons because if without his Lionel's money, the campaign probably would have faltered and they wouldn't have won, but will possibly not have won. Will not win. That's what I'm trying to say, the election. So I just feel like everyone's talking to each other, but no one's actually picking up on all the things. Like Martha, if she picked up that Clark was about to say something about sex, she certainly didn't show it in her face.
Yep.
And Clark completely missed the fact that Martha was confessing to her own secret there. And I just feel like these characters are talking at each other a lot right now. They're not really talking to each other a whole lot.
Yeah. And like you said, so many parallels in everyone. And it's a good showcase of a good idea because I think, well, the other thing about this episode that is interesting and the previous episode is that there are no powered problems. Like they're not facing someone with, you know, super speed or can turn invisible or can do all these things. And this episode and the previous one, it's just people.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think it does a really good job to highlight the fact that, you know, we all have things that we have that we don't tell other people, even though they're probably the people we should tell more than anyone else. But so I think it works really well, especially once you, because you have to, I mean, in a lot of ways, you have to layer in more of those problems because you don't, again, you don't have someone that controls bees or whatever interesting version of meteor powers that they happen to have.
Yes. So Lois shows up. She's there to go over some final numbers with Jonathan. They're week left to go in the campaign. She's got these great plans for all they're going to do. And Jonathan does sort of like ask something about the money. He doesn't do it directly, but he's just sort of like, that's a lot. And she's trying to blow it over. And again, from last episode, she knows that they've gotten money from Lionel, but she has promised Martha not to tell Jonathan. So she's keeping that secret. So once again, secrets not being told, but things are going to start coming out by the end of this episode, which sets us up for what happens next episode, I think. So we cut to Lana driving home. She's talking or driving somewhere. I assume home. I don't really know. She's on her headset because hands-free, got to be safe. And I actually made a note because I wasn't sure the first time I watched it through. She gets pulled over and she's on the phone with Chloe talking about the situation with Clark. And she's like, hey, I got to go. Let me call you right back. We learn later that, of course, she didn't call Chloe back. And I was trying to remember, did she actually say, hey, I'm getting pulled over? Or did she just say, hey, I'll call you back or I got to go? And she doesn't. She doesn't say anything about getting pulled over. Because I was kind of like, wouldn't Chloe be wondering why Lana never called her back? But I don't know. I guess Lana, especially in Smallville, is kind of flaky. So it's not that big of a deal. But if she had said, I'm getting pulled over, then Chloe should have been waiting for that phone call. But I don't think they did that to themselves there.
No. Yes. She just says, I got to go. And I feel like this is one of the few times where something happens and then it's actually explained later how it could have possibly happened. Because my first thought is, how in the world are you pulling her over? Like, how did you know that it's her of all the cars on the road or where she would even be? And then we'll find out later that there's an actual answer to that question.
Yes.
That doesn't always happen.
Right. But again, I think that goes to Flynn's preparedness. Yeah. Like he's thought this through and he even mentions like you and Lana have spent a lot of time together. So he's obviously been watching Lex for a while and studying this. So he's competent at what he's trying to do. He just, again, I feel like, you know, goes overboard and uses violence in a way that he shouldn't.
Yeah.
So we cut to Lana basically at the mansion. She's the token chip that they're going to try to use and they're going to threaten her life so that Lex will come out. And of course it works. Lex comes out. He can't stand to see the, you know, the thought of Lana to be hurt. And then while this is going on, Lana attacks Flynn and Lex disarms Harris. He shoots the Wi-Fi scrambler. They dive back into the panic room. Flynn takes two shots. Unfortunately, the second one hits Lex, but I do have questions because of where it shows the bullet hitting him. It's like in this chest, but he was diving away when he was shot at. So it should have been like his kidney or something.
Yeah. Well, and also based on where it was, I would all but guarantee he has a very collapsed lung, but that we're not going to, but we're
like three episodes ago, he was shot in the same place.
We are nigh invincible on this because you brought it up earlier and just like the campaign trail of like how many, like Jonathan and Lex talking about how many times they've been shot, of just like how indestructible they both are, is my thought of just like this going back and forth. Also, you know, because it was a previous thing. I don't feel like Clark had to hide that he didn't have a scar because nobody else does.
Right. Yeah. Apparently no one seems to care about those sorts of things.
Yeah.
We do get a quick line, though, because Lex, when they jump into the panic room, he's like, I told you knowledge of the ship could be dangerous. And again, I feel like that line is just there to remind us, OK, that's why Clark is not telling her. This is the Clark situation. But then he's like, oh, and he starts to stumble. And that's when we realize that he's been shot. There's some sort of magic effect in this show about people being shot somewhere, but it always ends up being on their chest. Because we get kind of the same thing with the sheriff later. Mm-hmm. All right. So anything else in the first act before we move on?
Nope. I think we're good.
So Jonathan presses Lois on the campaign finances, and she finally tells him that Lionel Luther gave the money, but she doesn't say that it was Martha's idea. Clark goes to Chloe for help, but Chloe doesn't want to come between Clark and Lana in the situation. Chloe gets a call about Lana's car being found abandoned. Clark zooms there and finds a clue. The sheriff heads to the mansion about a quote-unquote false alarm, but ends up shot in the back and the chest in some way by her own deputy, Harris. All right. So I have questions right off the bat here. So it looks like we're in the Talon apartment. Mm-hmm. Like the set that is like the campaign headquarters, like that. There's that kind of a distinctive blue sort of curved bookcase that I think in the past they've had like dishware and stuff in the Talon apartment. So I'm pretty sure that's what this is supposed to be.
Yeah.
Jonathan shows up and he pulls the ultimate power. I think this is just, if there's ever a show or a movie and they're trying to show how much power someone has, it's when they walk into a room and say, hey, can everybody else leave? I need to talk to somebody. And rather than saying, hey, Lois, can we step outside? Like the power move of everyone else, give me the room. I just think it's like ultimate powers. You see it in like kings and queens all the time. But three people walk out the door, which would be the outside of the Talon apartment. Another guy crosses in front of the camera and goes over where, if this is the apartment, he's in the living room. He's like chilling by the fireplace.
I was so happy when I saw this note because I thought the same thing. I was like, where did that guy go? Because I mean, I assume he left. I assume he left the apartment. My question turns into, how did he leave the apartment? Yeah. Did he just jump out a second story window? Is that how much power Jonathan holds in this scenario? Is he hiding in the bathroom? What in the world is happening? But yes, I thought the same thing. I also thought it's a much more practical use of the space instead of actually having someone live there, actually utilizing it for other things.
But it's a big slap in the face because Lex owns that building. That's the Talon. Yeah. Lex owns it. And that apartment is like this weird sort of like gift lease sort of thing that he did for Lana, but then she moved out. So Lois is using her Lex subsidized apartment to run the campaign against him. That's pretty cold.
Yeah. But I think it also does speak to, well, I mean, a lot of Lex's stuff was out of his mansion, which I mean, of course it was, but I think it does speak to like the homegrown version of Jonathan's campaign, the fact that it is there, because I think about locally, oftentimes when it comes around like local election time, and this may be true of other places, or it may just be true for me, but you'll see kind of like that one place in a strip mall that's been vacant for a while, but then like the campaign headquarters for someone will pop in there because it's space, you know, you're not taking up someone's home or anything like that. You're kind of separating that work that you're doing to an actual workspace. So that that's also funny to just like filter in that many people through the Talon up into this tiny apartment that has, mind you, no walls at all. It's always been a weird space to me, but I had totally not thought about the fact that Lex, this building you own, that's where we're gonna defeat you.
So Jonathan finally confronts her directly about the movie, about the money. She does a little bit of over the shoulder trying to deflect, and he's just not having it. And she finally comes straight out and says it's coming from Lionel Luther. And I feel like in a show, in an episode about a show that's a lot about lying and secrets, I feel like they went out of their way to show how trusted Lois could be with this secret because it's awful when it comes out. She knows how disappointed and how upset Jonathan's going to be. And she's got a get out of jail free card. She's got a, it wasn't my idea. Martha is the one who arranged this. I'm just the one that's, you know, this whatever. But she doesn't do that. She absolutely takes all the blame and makes it seem like it's her idea. And it's an idea that she agrees with because otherwise the campaign would have failed. And I just feel like they're trying so hard to remind you, like, because someday she's going to have a secret, Clark secret.
Yep.
And this is already telling us she can be trusted with it.
Yeah. And I also like the same reasoning and logic behind it. I mean, in so many ways, they're both right that, yes, the ultimate goal is that Lionel doesn't want Lex to have this, but there is still a price because you still got the money from Lionel, mm-hmm. regardless of the fact that he, you know, it does, from my perspective, it does seem like his real goal is, I just don't want Lex to win. So here's the money so that you have a real shot at defeating him. But also, I'm the one that gave you that money, and I'll cash that check when I need to.
And okay, and I don't know enough about campaign finance laws, but don't you have to disclose where your money comes from? Like, you can't have a billionaire that just writes you a blank check. I feel like there's like PACs and super PACs, and there's I know it still happens that billionaires still funnel so much money into elections, but I didn't think it was as obvious as just handing money over. And Lex has to be going, where the heck are they getting this money from? He knows how much this stuff costs. He knows they're perpetually broke. So why isn't, like, when they're trying to dig up dirt on Jonathan to begin the episode, why aren't they looking into his finances? Because there's got to be some shady accounting going on to make all that make sense.
Yeah, like you said, and it's not, there's no, but from what we've seen, it's literally just, here's a check.
Yeah, here you go. Here's a check.
Yep.
So we cut over to Met You, which I've been calling it Met You the whole time, and I feel like in the show, they have called it Met You before. Yeah. But I noticed tonight, or the last time I watched it, that the sign actually says University of Metropolis. So it should be U of M, not Met You. Uh-huh. I don't know if that means anything to anyone else, but I thought it was something I caught.
Oh, no, that's a huge deal. You get into the right part of the country, that's a huge deal. That's a real big deal. I don't think it's a big deal here, but you are correct, sir. If you make that mistake in the right place, you're in for a bad time.
It's like holding up your thumb for one or finger for one in the wrong movie. That can get you killed.
Yep.
So Clark zooms over to Chloe's room. He tornadoes her homework, which I think is a fun gag. I'm always in for it. But it also brings up, why doesn't that happen all the other times that Clark does this? And just no one seems stuck. There's no actual air disturbance when the plot doesn't need there to be one or want there to be one. But he looks like a wounded puppy, and she's like, okay, fine. And then she says,
all right, Dostoevsky's idiot isn't going to get any smarter.
So I looked up what Dostoevsky's idiot is, and the title is an ironic reference to the central character of the novel. So the name of the novel is called The Idiot. Prince Lev Nikolaevich Myshkin, sure. A young man whose goodness and open-hearted simplicity and guilelessness lead many of the more worldly characters he encounters to mistakenly assume that he lacks intelligence and insight. So is this supposed to be sort of a Clark reference? Like Clark is wholly good in a world of people that are trying to manipulate or would try to manipulate him?
Yeah, and it definitely does feel like, not something that people feel about Superman, but something that you feel is more of like that classic Clark thing. And I think it does lead to the idea that a pair of glasses and the unassumingness of his character is what really hides him, I think, more than the glasses. Right. Because the idea that, like, you know, someone bumping into everything, someone just feeling so naively just open to what the world is showing them, but it's so funny because that's all only masked by the idea that ultimately it's one of the most confident people on the face of the planet because they can just do whatever they want more often than not. Right. But yeah, no, I can see it certainly because, yeah, like I said, like that unassumedness lends people to think that Clark is, I don't even want to say dumb. I think maybe naive is probably the better statement.
I would think so as well. So if we have any Russian literature experts out there, Smallville Fancast at gmail.com. I would love to hear somebody who's much more intelligent than I am, which is not hard to find. What do you think? Like, was this reference actually, like, what did someone smart make this reference, or did someone do a quick Wikipedia search and make this reference? I'm curious. But anyway, so Clark's there talk about his breakup with Lana, or his fight, not his breakup. And she's like, I know, you know, I was on the phone with her. And this is where I wasn't sure what happened, but I went back and watched it. And Lana just said, I got to call you back. And he's very concerned about when she started looking into the ship with Lex. And I'm curious if that is tied to, because he knows that when Professor Fine died, the ship disappeared because Chloe and Clark went back to look for it. I'm trying to figure out, does he want to know if they ever actually touched the ship, or if it's, or like, was she around when something happened? I'm not sure why he's so desperate to know exactly when this has been going on, or maybe he just wants to know how long she's been lying to him. I'm just not sure exactly.
Yeah, I couldn't figure that out either, but in his effort to talk about that, I realized that Lana even lied when she started to tell the truth. Because ultimately she says, it's been weeks, but then she finds out later from Lex that the spaceship has been gone for weeks. So you started weeks before that, which is probably into the months range. It probably is, because it's the whole trajectory of why are you even going for your astrology and blah, blah, blah. So like even when you started to tell Clark, you lied. Yeah, so
half truths.
Yeah.
Right. But again, is that a deliberate parallel to Lois telling Jonathan that, yes, the money come from Lionel, but not telling that it was Martha's, you know? So we're getting two similar people two loves of Clark's life. Both of them are lying to people. Both of them are trying to conceal part of the truth. But one of them we look at favorably. Lois is stand up. She's not letting Martha take the blame. And then Lana, we're like, why aren't you telling the truth? But then Clark's also lying. So I don't know if they're trying to say anything, or if they're just like, you know, they're trying to echo the storyline. So there's everybody's got a secret that everybody's trying to lie about type of a thing. I don't know. But this is where we get the call from the cops, who are like, hey, we just found Lana's car. Don't know why they would have called Chloe. I guess in this town, the sheriff does know that Chloe and Lana are friends. So maybe it does make sense that she would call to check on her type of a thing. But this crazy mess. So they found Lana's car. So Clark zooms there and the sheriff even says,
Sheriff.
Mr. Kent, what'd you do? Drop out of the sky?
And we've already seen in other episodes this season where she's actually very shrewd. Like specifically the episode where she's at the farmhouse and the convicts are there and they've got Lana behind the wall, or Martha behind the wall. So just the way she's sort of like, did you fall out of the sky? And how did you find that? Like, I feel like the way she's saying that is telling us that she knows, maybe not that he's an alien, but I think she knows he's got powers.
Yeah.
And where the F did he come from? So yes, that is a valid question. So that's why I'm at this point, I'm saying that yes, she does know he has powers. She's just not saying anything.
Yeah. And also just like, oh, don't worry, I'll give y'all a chance to make up.
Yeah, exactly. That's what people in love do. Yeah. And I'm going to give you a chance to make up, because I'm pretty sure she's been kidnapped. Again, I don't know that part of the conversation needed to be there. I don't think she needs to say it's a kidnapping. I guess maybe it's obvious. But this is where I say Clark's using his powers irresponsibly. Well, one, he shows up, that he could have called her, I'm sure. But he finds the GPS tracker. The sheriff turns it up and goes, oh, there's a serial number, 5119K. And then Clark disappears. Yeah. One, does he know that he got the entire serial number? And two, if he had stayed around two more seconds, he would have heard, hey, there's an alarm up at the Luther mansion.
Yep.
And I think that would have been like, huh. He could have went straight there, solved a lot of problems.
Yeah, I also think of, like, I had been thinking about it in this episode and others, of just, like, why, and part of it is for plot. It's just interesting to see when they choose to use Clark's investigative powers, especially in scenes of crimes. Like, when he goes somewhere, his ability to see and find things is so much better than anyone else's. Mm-hmm. It's just weird sometimes when he does not do that.
Right. Yes.
But then he does do it and you're like, yeah, of course you did, because you're Superman.
Like, that's like 90% of the time when I say yes to the, is Clark using his powers irresponsible? It's when he doesn't use them.
Yeah.
Like, that's what's the irresponsible, is that you didn't need to be seen because you could have kept running the whole time. Or you didn't need to even show up. You could have used your x-ray vision and saw what you needed to see. So whenever he doesn't use his powers smartly, I consider him using them irresponsibly.
Yeah.
But the sheriff is like a billionaire running for the Senate, gets a false alarm. Yeah, I'm going to go up there, make sure they're okay. And then Harris tries to play it off like she actually hasn't spoken to the homeowner. And sheriff's like, you can't clear a false alarm until you've talked to the homeowner. So she goes in to figure out what's going on. She finds the dead campaign manager. She confronts Flynn. Flynn pulls his gun. But then we hear a gunshot and the sheriff is shot in the back. But the bullet, I guess, didn't actually come out her chest. It just poked through because that's where the blood is. Again, it makes really no sense other than to give her that last line where she looks down.
Well, ain't that a mother?
And then dies. So no more Sheriff Nancy Adams.
That's so weird. It just felt so abrupt. Also, this is a small production pet peeve. Ain't no gun gonna smoke like that. It's just not how that works. It's way too long. And that's just not how modern ammunition works. That's maybe your old, if she had a musket, I'd give it a little credit. But even then, it's highly unlikely. Also, it holds for like a half second too long. So if anyone's rewatching this episode, or if you go to rewatch it, you can literally see that the smoke is coming up from the bottom of the screen, not anywhere from the gun, to give the literal smoking gun appearance.
Smoking gun, yes.
But I mean, it was an interesting way to see her exit, because you did have that. And is it because now it's like, clearly she knows, so she's got to go.
Right.
Part of me is a little bummed because you started to have that relationship. And does she become a confidant? Would she have become a confidant of Clark? And based on her characterization, I kind of feel like she would have been. Like, I think she would have been aware enough to have it retroactively explain the experiences that she's had with Clark to realize that he is also a good.
But she's trying to recruit him for the force.
Yeah, to realize he's a good guy. And also, like, if there's anyone that kind of just gets all this nonsense, it's the poor, poor sheriff that's had to deal with it on a, I assume, daily, if, you know, weekly basis.
So one of the things that I've read about this series in this episode is that there had been some teases in like the trailers and the media around this release that a main character was going to die this season. Now, obviously we know who that is. Next episode, it's a tearjerker, spoilers, right? But they intentionally killed her off in this episode and somewhat suddenly to try to conceal the fact that who dies next episode. I don't know why I'm trying not to spoil it. Everyone knows, but just in case, I guess I won't say it here. I think I've said it earlier in the show already, or this season, whatever.
Having you get to go ahead and experience two deaths, not one. So right. Have fun, everybody.
So I think that's what they were trying to do. And well, in fact, I mean, I do know that they specifically, some of the writers and the show producers had said they wanted her character to die to at least fool some of the audience into thinking, oh, they've been teasing all year, someone's going to die. It's the sheriff, and then they go into the next episode and then get sideswiped by what happens in that episode. So I don't know that it would have worked had I been watching it real time. I don't remember thinking that at the time, but I don't know that I would consider her a main character, but I don't know. I'm just like, so again, I'll call it the audience. Anyone who remembers in real time, did this in any way make you think, oh, this was the death they've been teasing the whole time? Were you in any way more shocked next episode because of this episode?
No, it wasn't for me. So for me, it was not an important enough character. Also, I think it's still surprising enough that it's at this point in the season.
Mm.
That the fact that it is next episode that it happens and not later into the season.
Yeah.
I feel like that's actually surprising enough, because my thought would have been, you do it in the finale.
So I
was surprised.
All right. So if you don't mind, will you read the third act summary?
Chloe helps Clark track down the GPS locator serial number, putting them on Flynn's trail. At the mansion, Lex tells Lana the truth about the ship disappearing, but he is getting worse. Desperate, Lana agrees to take Harrison Flynn to the ship, which she just learned has disappeared, in exchange for them calling for help. Yes, in exchange for them calling for help for Lex. They say no, and Lana is forced to go with them, leaving Lex to fend for himself.
So we're at the Daily Planet with Clark and Chloe. She's doing some hacker stuff, apparently hacking into like the server of the company that sells those. yada, yada. She ends up figuring out that it was sold to Gregory Flynn. But the part that I don't understand is it looks like she's still hacking to get information because it's the same like Matrix style numbers are running. But just like a Ask Jeeves search of Gregory Flynn would probably have brought up 90% of what they needed to know about him. You know, he's a former deputy. Was there the day the meteor shower. He's currently like, I don't know what they were hacking into. I guess his psychiatric file, but then they still had to go to the office to see the videotapes. If they're hacking into his files, there should have been notes. So I'm a little bit confused by that.
Yeah. One, I don't think you're going to get to use your work computer to accomplish those things. That's just me.
Probably not.
Two, I really enjoy watching hacking happen on most TV shows, because having been in IT long enough, none of this is how that works at all. Like, you know, when you see someone like actively writing code in the moment, I'm just like, that's not what they do. That's not what anyone does. You wrote the code before. You literally are just like pressing yes and implementing the code. You're not handwriting it as it happens. This is not a piano. There was a lot more preparation, but also that just was like random numbers just flying by. It made me.
They're rerouting through the subnet.
Very happy. Yes. Also, how was that man's information tied to that GPS? But this is our current logical leap situation in the episode by far and away. I'm like, none of this. No.
But then we have a sort of reverse lack of leap of logic when they're like, oh, he's a former sheriff. He was there the day the meteor shower happened. He's kidnapped Lana. Huh. You think Lex and the spaceship might be involved? Like, Chloe and Clark both know that Lex had the spaceship. Yeah. They both know where it was, the same warehouse. They both know that it has since disappeared. I feel like they have all the information they need right now to know that they need to go to the mansion.
Yeah. You would think so, but I mean, yeah, because I kind of wonder what the point is of seeing the site. Are we supposed to feel bad? Are we supposed to feel bad for him? More bad for him? I mean, ultimately, is this to try and make us feel like Lex is more of the bad guy? Because that's the direction we're going, certainly in the story. So is that what we're supposed to walk away from with this? Because it is, I mean, making me care more about this person,
right? His actual like videotape sessions or whatever.
Yeah, his genuine struggle of, you guys are putting me in here for a thing I saw, like I for real saw, and right. Like we as the audience know he definitely saw those things. You just don't want to believe him, or Lex is covering it up, or so. Yeah, I wonder if maybe the motivation was really to say like, no, this person is doing what is that from Wreck-It Ralph? Just because you're a bad guy does not mean you're a bad guy.
Yes.
Yeah. So, maybe that's what it is to say, no, Lex is the bad guy.
Like, yeah, because Lex is the bad guy. I do want to also note that Chloe came up with this like overly elaborate plan to get in. And then Clark's like, he does his little thing. And I feel like this is actually a payoff to the mortal or to the, was it the first episode when they were together, when he lost his powers, I think it was the second episode when they had to break into the facility and Chloe like is trying to like hack our way. And Clark's like, if I had my powers, I would just rip the door off the hinges and walk in. And she's like, well, you know, we're just going to turn off the power. So I kind of feel like this was sort of like a tag on that. Like, well, now Clark's got his power. So when they're trying to break into places, he's kind of got it covered.
Yeah. Also, I definitely thought, like, when he zoomed in and zoomed back, that he would just have the thing that they wanted. Yeah. I 100% thought that that's what he would do with all of the power that he has. But instead, he decided to shake a soda can.
Yeah, he just caused a distraction so that they could both break in. And then I did get an eye at the end of the scene where Clark zooms away once he finally realizes what's going on. And Chloe's just like, damn, wish I could do that.
Yeah.
Because that is how you would feel like if you had a superpowered friend and they were just like casually like, hey, I'm going to head to Italy to pick up pasta for the dinner for the family tonight. Or, hey, I'm just going to run to Manhattan because there's the world premiere of the new Spider-Man movie or something. You're like, damn it. I kind of wish I could do that.
Yeah. And it's always interesting to see how unfazed he is by the use of power, which I feel like that's a pretty Superman thing to think and to say, is that just like doing those runs does not bother him at all. Like, which is always interesting because you see oftentimes with like more Flash based characters, or, you know, a little while ago, you know, when we had AC, which is still weird to me, but it's fine, where, you know, he had to always drink the water, or Barry is constantly eating everything that's not pinned down, but Clark is just zooming through life without a second thought.
Care in the world.
Yep.
So we have one of my favorite scenes. I almost did this scene as our cold open scene as well, as with Martha and Jonathan, when Jonathan's all upset at Lois and Martha finally comes clean. And again, I just think it's well done. I think it's well acted. I like a lot of what happens here, but it cracks me up. Jonathan is doing his like sharpening of the axe. And then when he finds out that Martha did it, he has like, it's almost like a Looney Tunes style. He just like, and like shoves the axe in there because he's so mad, and just grinds it down. I don't know why, but it just made me laugh.
Just so we're clear, that's terrifying. That was terrifying for me to watch, just because, one, that's not real. Okay, first off, sometimes I realize I know things that people don't think that I would know. So I took ag mechanics all through high school because that was super fun. I didn't have to pay anything, and I got to do cool stuff in the shop. One, there is no way that's the grinder that you would use for an axe. You would use a stone. You would use other things. Secondly, the most terrifying thing you could possibly do would be to shove that axe into that grinder, because the likelihood that you would then not be holding it anymore is so high. But the fact that it's not, I mean, you're not going to get a stunt double to do this thing. It's just, I don't know if they set something up different about the grinder so that kind of thing wouldn't happen, because all in all, it was throwing a lot of extra sparks, in my opinion. So was it a different grinding wheel? All these things. But all I was mortified when I saw that scene, because I was like, wow, that really worked out for you. It could have gone so very poorly.
Yeah, my ignorance here of the practical nature of that was a benefit, because I just thought it was funny, all the sparks, and then they're sound as the more sparks come out. I just thought that was funny.
Oh no, it was fantastic, but at the same time, I was terrified. Yeah.
But there's a couple moments in this conversation where Martha is absolutely correct that everybody who's donated to Jonathan is going to want favors. That's kind of how politics works. Like, I helped you get you elected, and now potholes in my road, or hey, I need help with the zoning commission thing. Like, that's kind of how politics works. And Martha's like, it shouldn't be any different with Lionel Luthor. But John's right, it is gonna be different with Lionel Luthor. One, because it seems like he gave a lot of money, and you could, just about everyone is basically saying single-handedly, if Lionel didn't help them, they would have lost. So if he ends up winning, then obviously he is going to owe him something. But also, Lionel knows Clark's adoption is fake. And in Smallville, with all the weird stuff that's been going on and them trying to keep Clark secret, the one person who knows that specific detail, who then you owe a favor to, is a little bit different than the Rotary Club or the Firefighters Union or whatever.
Yeah. Yeah. And it was absolutely required to get, like, Jonathan is no doubt well known in the circles that he travels, and probably somewhat outside of that. But Kansas is not the smallest state in the U.S. And the fact that, yeah, you'd have all of Topeka, you'd have all of Wichita, you have the part of Kansas City. Fun fact, I know a lot about Kansas because that's where my parents are from. So anytime we talk about Smallville, I think of like the super small city. Like, I was back there not that long ago, but yeah, like this super expansive place that also has a lot of really small rural communities that wouldn't know anything about him. If they don't spend that money, it will not happen. Also, yes, I think Lionel gave them a ridiculous amount of money.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which, again, someone should have noticed that. They should be like, how can they afford this? But anyway.
Ah.
All right. So we cut back to the mansion. Lex is getting worse. I'm counting him as being unconscious, because it seems like he's already lost consciousness when Lana tries to wake him up, because he's going into shock. And we get a really nice conversation. I almost picked this as our cold opening, but this one was too short, and then the other one was a little bit too long. But she's like, do you, like, tell me something. And he's like, do you think I'd look better with hair? And I think her laugh there, we've knocked Kristen multiple times before for not being the best actor in like the early seasons, but I think she nails the,
oh yeah,
this is a terrible situation, but what Lex said is genuinely funny here. I think her laugh there was like perfect.
Okay, well, tell me something. Anything, just keep talking, okay?
think I look better with hair?
I don't know. I've never thought about it.
Oh, I have. I thought about a lot of things.
Yeah, and I almost wonder, in instances like that, did Michael Rosenbaum just say something?
Right. Did he just ad-lib that? Was it in the script? Was it a different joke? Yeah, because it seems so real.
Yeah, because a lot of times I feel like we all admit she is not the best actress in the world, but at the same time, I feel like she is not given a lot of great things to work with in this show. I.e., you know, I've listened to the episode about where the whole vampire thing, she wasn't even supposed to be the character. Yep. And I was like, that makes so much more sense now that I have this additional information, because the whole thing seemed weird the whole time.
Yes, it does.
But yeah, no, I thought it was perfect. Like, it felt like, you know, not just the character, but the actress was genuinely laughing in that moment. And it just, yeah. But again, we're also needing to foster that relationship, because again, that the trajectory that we're on, those things need to happen. And then, you know, where he starts to admit Lexmas as well.
Yeah, yeah, because I do really like that he goes back, you know, does Clark know that he has really nice hair? You know, I think it worked really well. And he's like, I had a dream once. Clark and I were friends again, and you were there too. You were the best part of the dream. Like, I was like, oh, gutted that he's admitting this to her after what we saw, the choices he's making right after. It seems like he's going in a completely different direction, but here he seems to be turning back around, but it's just not quite clear what, it's not quite clear what's going on here. But then he finally admits that the ship disappeared, and that's why he can't tell them the truth, because they're just going to kill both of them at that point. And then, you know, he's like, why would you lie to me? Because I didn't know how to tell you. You know, our lives have been so affected by this meteor. This was our way to try to understand it. I was hoping to find it again before you found out, but I should have been honest with you. And then he goes unconscious. So I'm actually counting him as unconscious twice in this episode.
Yeah. And it also doesn't help that Flynn at some point has now hacked into here and changed the temperature to a...
Oh, yeah, yeah. I left that out. He says it's going to be like 130 in there at some point.
One, I think that's a terrible way to set your panic room up. You should probably have all the systems inside the panic room. That's just me. Also, at that point, I'd do more than that. I mean, a lot of shows show solitary confinement and the extreme measures that sometimes shows will go of, like, changing the lights, turning, because if you turn them all off, it'd be pitch black in there. You turn them all back on and it's super bright. You play terrible music all the time. You obviously, that's not what we're going to do for the show. I just found it interesting that Flynn didn't take extra measures.
Right, didn't go any higher than that. Yeah.
Also, if you kill him, he can't tell you. Was my other thought of turning it up to 130 degrees after you've shot him in the chest.
Yeah. Well, he technically shot him in the back. It just, but the magic bullet ended up in his chest.
Yeah.
But Lexo's unconscious again. Lana can't wake him up. She makes a decision to throw on her jacket, which I find quite odd considering it's 130 degrees in there. Walks outside. And again, the point here is, though, that Lex came out of the panic room to try to save her. And, you know, we don't know that the plan all along was to disarm the cops and jump in the panic room, but he did come out to save her. He wouldn't let her die. And she's making the same choice. I'm going to step out. You're going to call an ambulance for him. And then we get like one of the coldest lines ever when Flynn looks in on him and goes, I've seen worse. Because it's true, but I mean, Lex is unconscious with a gunshot wound. He's not moving. He's still inside the room that is probably 130 degrees. And they're like, nah, you'll be fine. You're going to take us to the spaceship first. And Lana gets her bluff called and is like, okay. And then so they all leave.
He'll walk it off. I also did think the jacket thing was weird. It just it felt like a power move, though. Just like, I'm back. I'm outside.
It's a nice jacket. Looks good on it.
Yep.
All right. So we're going to jump into our fourth act here. Clark and Chloe break into this. Wait, did we cover that wrong?
Oh, I guess we did talk about it, but it happens here.
We talked about the wrong spot. Oh, well. So now Clark and Chloe break into the psychiatric office at the Smallville Medical Center and learn that Flynn was there the day the spaceship crashed and saw Lex take the ship. This leads Clark to zoom to the mansion and save Lex. At the warehouse, the ship is missing. Lana tries to escape, but is knocked unconscious as a bomb is set to explode. Lex awakes just long enough to tell Clark where Lana has gone. Clark arrives there just in time to save Lana from the explosion. So we've already covered this. Basically, we get the scene where Clark and Chloe break into the psychiatric ward, and then they watch the video and they find out that's what's going on. So Clark zooms off to save them.
Yeah. Which it is interesting because, like, yeah, like you said, the timeline of things had, I mean, we go all the way back and had Clark just hung out for a couple seconds later. Yeah. And again, don't get me wrong, it's movie magic. It's absolutely required because it could have been 5, 10, 15 minutes later that piece of the conversation would have actually happened. But obviously right. That doesn't make any sense for us as the viewer or the watcher to stand there and watch them comb the scene for 15 minutes
right.
before finding out that there's an alarm. But yeah, then they do just all of these things. And then finally to circle back to the thing that, like you said, they probably should have already known and zoom in to find at this point how many people tied up. I mean, not that he's going to go get the rest of the security team, but we got to ask how long are those poor souls somewhere. And then two dead people and an unconscious Lex.
Yeah, that's a lot. That's a lot for Clark. Also, yeah. He does zoom into the office before he stops. And we know there are cameras in the mansion now because we've seen the sheriff in the hallway on them. We've seen different angles of the office. So even though Flynn shot the one, there were still other cameras. Oh, so yeah. Lex has video evidence now that Clark basically teleported into his office from nowhere. So then we cut to the warehouse where Flynn, Harris, and Lana are. This is where we get the "he's my fiance" line about how, like, I told the truth and you lied about what we saw and I got fired and put in the ward and, you know, you got rewarded for it. Basically, they brought a bomb. And Lawless like thinks they're going to try to blow up the ship. And they're like, no, we know this bomb isn't going to hurt it, but it's going to cause enough destruction that the fire is going to show up. Police are going to show up. Media is going to be here. And we're going to show the world there's a spaceship, which honestly isn't a terrible plan. I mean, I'm glad they weren't trying to blow the ship up because that would have been kind of ridiculous. But I think that's actually a pretty smart plan. They get there. And of course, the ship's gone. And Lana's like, it was here last time I saw it. And then she, like, there's like a truck with like a wagon for a load of like big, I'm sure they're like actually aluminum, but they're supposed to look like big steel pipes. She flips that. So Flynn gets buried. He drops the bomb. Harris and Lana start to fight. Harris gets the best of her and Lana goes unconscious. So we have now our third unconscious person for the episode. We're not counting the deaths. Unfortunately, that's not something we've been tracking, but unconscious people, we've got Lex twice and Lana not once.
Yep. Yeah. It's convenient that that whole truck full of things
just works. Yeah. Why was it there? It just happened to be parked there. It was kind of a weird
classic. Also, I dropped the briefcase and it popped open and it set off the timer.
Oh, yeah, of course. Yes.
Yeah. But I totally agree. Like, that's a really good plan for someone in Flynn's scenario to say, I've gone through all what I felt were the proper channels and none of you believed me to the point that I am, again, I have no job. You put me in a psychiatric ward and, well, I will get enough people to come down here and look at the thing that's not here. Well, okay. Yeah.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. So then we have a very quick scene where it looks like, I think they're at the hospital or maybe they're just in the hallway and the paramedics are there. But Lex is like in a gurney or a bed and Clark's talking to him like, where's Lana? Where's Lana? And he says, warehouse 15, which means nothing unless Clark already knows. Like if I were to tell you, like you say, hey, Michael, yeah. Where did you stash the thing? Oh, it's in locker 72. You don't know what that means. Like, I don't think the warehouses are numbered on the outside. He should have said the warehouse on Roosevelt and Vine or something.
Yeah. I mean, he has to know about the spaceship. And you could cover it up that he could know because now Lana either told him or he found out that Lana was looking into it. But the fact of the matter is, the only reason you know warehouse 15 is because you already knew
that's warehouse where the spaceship. 15.
Yeah, right. Yeah. You already knew it.
And again, and I get Lex's shot, but once again, Lex will be able to get a record that says, hey, the paramedics arrived on site at 3:42 because they're going to write the times down. I was taken by ambulance to the hospital and I arrived at 4:02. Clark was there at the time. And then there's another police report that says, hey, at 4:04, we were on site at an explosion and Clark Kent was there. There is now clear documentation that if Lex has any insight at all, we'll be able to get that Clark was in two places at once, both of them timestamped by fire or by medical services.
Yeah.
Ooh. But again, he doesn't care. Anyway, so Clark shows up. I will say that Flynn does try to disarm the bomb. Like he clearly doesn't he's not trying to hurt anybody. He doesn't have to, I guess. It's sort of like his morality. I do like that they gave him the moment of like, no, I can do this. And then Harris is like, no, we got to get out of here. They don't stop to pick up Lana, though. They just leave her there. That's not good. And I think that the CGI actually of Clark showing up as the bomb explodes and then going through the bomb was actually kind of cool. Yeah. You know, again, 2006 CGI, that worked for me.
Yeah, both that and the ridiculously budgeted explosion of the warehouse.
Oh, yeah.
Because so one of the things that you can do in production to reduce that budget is to blow up a miniature. Mm-hmm. But oftentimes you can kind of tell, if you really look, you can tell, well, let's say this in a less kind way. On a show like this, you can tell that it's a miniature. Like for Independence Day, they blew up a miniature of the White House. That's not something you can really tell. They did a lot of effort, you know, a lot of post-production, things like that. That's not the avenue that Smallville would go if they blew up a right. miniature. They did not blow up a miniature. This is a real building
yes.
that they absolutely blew up to a ridiculous degree.
I agree. I wrote that in my notes. It's like, this is a real explosion in a real building. That's yeah. what we're looking at here. I don't know yeah. where this was. It certainly, I don't think it's the same location we've seen previously. Because at one point we see Harrison Flynn run out. It looks like the same shed that the Bee Lady was in when it blew up. But this was a real building somewhere that got really blown up.
Also, credit to whoever Flynn's stunt actor is. They threw that poor man like nobody's business, like a rag doll.
Yeah,
and that's a painful. Real that's a real human that went through that process was my other takeaway. Like the overall, that like yeah, overall, for some reason, this scene very, very well done. Like you said, the CGI of him running through the explosion, knowing that's the only way he's going to be able to get to Lana. We could put aside the fact that you took Lana and you started moving at that speed. You absolutely broke that poor woman into in multiple half. Pieces. That's not yeah. how this works. Regardless, it's fine. It's fine. But then, yeah, that explosion, then the actual explosion, the stunt work after, like all of it was just so well done.
Yep, very much well done. I'm also counting Flynn and Deputy Harris as going unconscious as well, because they do get yep. thrown by the blast and it appears that they are unmoving. There's also this weird scene when Clark shows up and he like uses his X-ray vision and it kind of looks like they froze the frame. Like there's something weird about the way he's standing there. And it's like 3 seconds long. Maybe he didn't actually stop and they decided to maybe they're like, we need to add in that he uses X-ray vision first to explain how he knew how to get where, whatever. I don't know. But it seemed like an insert shot yep. sort of a thing. It was just weird.
Yeah. No, I thought the same thing of like that. But yeah, if they took a still of him and then held it, yeah, I think that would probably explain it. Because it did seem very weird because it almost didn't all the way look like Tom Welling. But that would make more sense if he's, you know, in motion and they took mm-hmm. that, you know, shoved that picture in there.
So Lana wakes up just enough to ask, like, how did you get here? Sort of a thing. And he's like, I don't know. I just got here and found you. And she's like, that doesn't make any sense, which she doesn't. And he's like, you're alive. That's all that matters. So once again, gaslighting the woman he loves. And that will take us into our fifth act. If you don't mind, will you read that summary, please?
Flynn goes to jail and no one's going to believe him. Clark wants to blame Lex for Lana being in danger, but she made the choice after he saved her first. Jonathan sold some land to pay back Lionel. Lex and Lana are not partners any longer. Lana wants to try and be friends. Clark catches them embracing and goes to Chloe, who once again tells him he has to tell her the truth.
So we open up the scene. Flynn is like just screaming, she knows, she's working with Luther, she knows. And we actually get the EMT that's working on Lana says, what a nut about Flynn as he's walked away. And I could not hear what he was saying, but it seemed like it was such a prominent line that I watched most things with subtitles on. For whatever reason, I wasn't watching this one subtitles on. I went back and turned them on. And then you could hear the EMT say, what a nut. So clearly this is to let us know that no one's going to believe Flynn. So we don't have to worry about Flynn anymore.
Yeah. And then Lana's totally fine. Just, yep. Totally fine. Don't worry about it.
She's absolutely okay. But she does, again, the parallels and the echoes and the mirrors with like the Lois situation. Clark wants to blame Lex for putting Lana in danger here. And she's like, no, I did this to myself. He saved me. I wanted to save him. I knew full well what was going to happen. And this echoes this partial truth and storytelling and who's doing right and who's doing wrong by these partial truths.
Yeah. And then also, I mean, the same thing of just like, yeah, who, all of these things coming together and starting to figure out. And then also, you know, going into Lois being like, no, I'm very sorry for taking the money from Lionel. It was me. I did it.
And I did it.
Yeah, and she's like, no, he knows. Don't worry about it. Also, the idea of selling like that plot of land is interesting because, again, so my grandfather actually owned a big parcel of land, and one of the things was that he actually sold it to Wayne Newton, of all people, and got a substantial amount of money based on that sale. How had that never happened until now? Right. With all the woes, and also more of the woes, and I think it's really the line of I've done nothing with it. Mm-hmm. That's probably the only part of that that didn't make any sense to me personally, was like, well, you just had land that you weren't farming or doing anything with, and you didn't sell it.
Season 3, they lost the farm. They were moving away from the farm before Lex showed up and rebought it back for them. He had that much land he could have sold then.
Oh man. Yeah.
It also bothers me because we're in the holiday season. You probably have started to see these commercials. Most people don't watch commercials anymore. It happens every Christmas time where you have this family, they're out building a snowman, and then all of a sudden a big Dodge truck shows up and the woman's like, or the guy's like,
oh yeah.
Okay. I can never imagine having so much money that I could go out and buy a brand new $40,000-$50,000 vehicle as a surprise for my wife. Like, that's just not in my level of reality. But I get that Jonathan is upset at Martha for taking the money without telling him. Him selling that land without telling her first is kind of the same thing.
Oh, yeah. And like I said, the only part that really bothers me is that you weren't actively using it. Yeah. Because if you were actively using it and you lost the whole farm, get it. If you were actively using it and then you brought yourself to sell it, I get it. But you just had this just cash pile hanging out in the back. just didn't do it until now that you want to partially pay back Lionel.
Yeah. There's also this one line here where they're looking at the commercial that Lois basically had made that she's going to be playing. And Jonathan says, I don't know, I feel like the flag might be a bit much. That has to be just sort of a tongue-in-cheek joke because this show is known for having flags everywhere.
Oh, yeah.
They were filming early in season one when the 9/11 attacks happened in New York, and they made a conscious decision that the writers have talked about this, the show producers talked about that. They wanted to lean heavily into the patriotism of it. So there are more flags in the show because they wanted to sort of reflect that patriotism after that attack. So I feel like that's just got to be sort of like I don't even know if it was in the script or if Jonathan made that line up or whatever, but I feel like that someone wrote that line specifically to make fun of kind of the show itself for all the flag work they do here. The other thing I want to know is, so Lois kind of just brings up again the fact that she took the money from Lionel there, and Martha's like, he knows. But I kind of feel like Lois was doing that, hoping that if Martha had not yet confessed, that she would force her to. Because that's very much what that moment is. Like, there's no reason to bring that up again other than to get yelled at by Jonathan, like to make him angry again. So I feel like she was actually like wanting him to get angry so that Martha would then feel pressured to confess and tell the truth there, as if she hadn't already. And I kind of want to give her credit for it. I think it's a pretty shrewd move.
Yeah, like, come on. Come on, we can't keep lying to him, and I can't keep being the person that's taking all the heat for this because I did not make this choice.
Right, exactly. So I did what I was supposed to do. I took the heat, but now I need you to step up and do me a favor here. So we go back to the Smallville Medical Center. Lex is up and about. I think he's actually in the bed originally, so I am counting him in a hospital bed. He's also in the hospital for our counts. And Lana comes and we get some, this is where he does like half-hearted over the shoulder, because he actually turns and kind of looks, he's facing the front, but he turns his head in a weird kind of way. He's talking to her. And he's like, you know, you're one of the few good things in my life. I don't want to lose you. And it's like, you know, all I've ever asked for you is the truth. And he says, this is all you'll ever get from me from now on. And I feel like multiple people have said the same line multiple times in the show. I think Clark has said that to her. Yeah. I think Lex has said that before to her. But there's this moment where he says, you know, let's be partners again. And she says, no, he has just been shot. He should not be out of bed. And I get what the setup and payoff is. Let's try being friends. But in that moment, that is exceedingly cruel to let that hang even for a millisecond in the state that Lex is in.
And it is, and again, to the credit of both, it is well delivered and painfully received. Like, she delivers it well to the point where I'm like, wait, huh? And then it was like, no, let's be friends. It was like, oh, that wasn't nice.
No,
that wasn't nice at all. I see what you did, but I don't know why you had to. But you did a good job at it. You sold me. You sold him.
Well executed.
Yeah, but bad. Unkind.
So they go for a hug. Clark shows up. And I'm not sure if we're supposed to think that Lana actually saw Clark. And then the fact that he was gone, she's confused by that. We know Lex doesn't because he zooms away. But I wasn't 100% sure if Lana actually saw him or thought like saw something. But before she could focus on it, obviously it was gone. But either way, we see Clark embrace. So basically, Chloe's words have come true. He has all but forced Lana into the arms of another man. Now, there is not romantic yet, at least not from Lana's side, but I'm sure Lex is sensitive that way. But this is what Chloe's been saying over and over and over again. And that's how we end the episode. Clark once again goes back and Chloe's like, you have to tell her. And if you want this relationship to work, you have to tell her the truth. I think that's even the very last line of the episode is then tell her the truth. And then the episode ends. And I feel like this episode has told us in the writing that that is what's going to happen. You know, with the whole thing earlier about we got to find a thing and then Lois showing up. I feel like the way that the episode ends, we should expect next episode that Clark is in fact going to tell her the truth. Dear listener, we'll have to watch next week and find out.
Woo, I've watched. I know the answer. You should watch too. But yeah, like you said, it is the ultimatum of like either you don't be with her or you tell her. That's it.
That is the way it has to work. So I did rush a little bit through the fifth act because we're running a little bit tight on time. So I want to give you a chance, circle back. Is there anything that you want to talk about? Anything we skipped ahead that you would like to touch on before we move on?
No, I think we're good. We can jump to the final thoughts.
All right. So final thoughts on the episode. Did you like it? Are you interested in watching more? And then we can then roll into the Man versus Superman thesis. Yeah.
No, I thought it was a really good episode. Like I said, the previous one and this one are really interesting in the fact that you're not having a powered is probably the way I would say that it's just people. You're just dealing with people and you're using, you know, Clark is using his powers to deal with those people, but ultimately it is there's no one with a power, which is always an interesting Superman story to tell because that oftentimes means his powers don't always affect what's going on and he's just having to deal with it as a more of a person. So I like it.
So I'll just say, so final thoughts for myself. I like this episode. I do have some nitpicks with it again, but I think the writing overall is pretty strong. I like all the mirrors and the echoes and the sort of like, you know, the similarity and how people are talking, the lies and how they kind of work back on each other. So I actually think it's a pretty well-written episode. And it's good. It's table setting. The last couple have been table setting for what happens next episode. It's obviously the biggest thing, you know, mid-season, big deal, big episode for a lot of stuff going on. And I think this episode sets it up well, because we've been telling Clark for a while, you need to be honest with Lana. You need to be honest with Lana. And I think we finally get to see that is, it sinks in. He makes a big decision about that. And then we have to deal with the fallout and the consequences. So I would say this isn't my favorite episode, but I would say it's good. I'd give like a good B+ as far as episodes and that kind of stuff. So, all right. So now Man versus Superman. So you've been here before, so you know how it works. I won't go through the spiel. What do you think about this episode through that lens?
So much man, because and for everyone, you know, it's dealing with real problems in so many ways. You're like, oh, I thought this was going to be more date than it was studying. Like, that's like kind of the crux of most of the things that Clark deals with. I mean, heck, even using, I mean, other than being places quickly and, you know, the explosion, but like, he doesn't use his powers a lot for very many things that he probably could have just not used his powers for at all. I think that it leans really, really heavily on the man versus Superman, because ultimately, you know, the final line of either
right,
tell her the truth or be done with it, sir.
I mean, the whole episode is predicated on the fact that he can't tell her the truth, and that's all his problems are man problems, but the reason they exist is because he won't be honest with her, which is his heritage and destiny to become Superman. So I think this episode does examine it. Like, basically it's in the crosshairs. The fact that you can't be honest is why you're having these problems. Like, all the problems you have this episode could just about be solved if you would just have told her the truth to begin with.
Yep.
Yep. All right. So with that, this is your chance to plug anything that you would like to social. It's your pass the torch question. So what do you want me to ask next week's co-host?
What is the number one thing you would have in your lockdown room?
Oh, nice. Okay. So your panic room
looks like garbage. It has like one super crappy cot and no fridge or nothing. I'm just confused. But yeah,
I mean, so he needs a mini fridge at least, right?
Nothing. Like it's
Xbox. You need something to do while you're in there. Deck of cards. So, all right.
Yeah.
All right. So now is your chance to plug anything you'd like to plug, sir.
As always, I do multiple podcasts. So if you want to check out Dungeons and Dragons related content, specifically for being a DM, you just search Dungeon Masters Block. And of course, if you want a show very similar to this about a different DC product, you can always check it out. Whelmed, The Young Justice Files, and hopefully very soon we'll be coming back for our deep dive analysis of season 4.
Excellent. So always a pleasure to have you here, Neil. Looking forward to talking to you again next season so we can catch up with your journey through Smallville and see if you're still liking the show. Because I think after season 5, some people really like some of the later seasons, some people don't. So I'll be interested to see what your takes are. As for me, of course, you can find most of what I do at the RPG Academy. Other than the show has its own Facebook, its own Twitter, and own email, smallvillefancast@gmail.com. We've been at 29 iTunes reviews for a while. If you have access to iTunes and want to throw us a review, I'd really appreciate it. I posted a couple things on Reddit recently about our show and trying to get some more people paying attention to it. Because again, Talkville is dominating the space. So if you see any of those, if you just see an upvote or throw a comment my way, would be very much appreciated. And then just remember to stay after the end credits for the scoreboard.
Farm to Fable is a Smallville Rewatch fan cast and is not officially affiliated with DC Comics, Warner Brothers Television, the CW Network, or any other owners of Smallville and/or its related source materials. As such, these companies retain sole ownership of all symbols, images, names, logos, and other proprietary material related to Smallville. Our use of logos, images, names, likenesses, and sound clips are being used under the Fair Use Guidelines. Our logo was created by Michael Waldschlager II. You can find Michael on Twitter at LoserMLW. Farm to Fable is written, edited, and produced by me, Michael Ross, with additional input by weekly co-hosts as credited in each episode's show notes. And now, let's check the scoreboard.
So, total number of vehicles wrecked, we're still at 78 because we had no new vehicles wrecked this week. Total number of times a person has been knocked unconscious. We're now at 272, with Lex going unconscious twice from the same gunshot wound. The first is when he's going into shock and Lana tries to tend to his wounds and he wakes up and talks to her. Then he passes out again and is found later by Clark. Lana is knocked out by Deputy Harris at the warehouse when they find where the spaceship isn't there. Lana tries to escape. Both Flynn and Deputy Harris appear to be knocked unconscious from the bomb blast of the bomb they brought to the warehouse in an effort to alert the media to the spaceship. So looking at our main cast, Lana has now been knocked unconscious 28 times. Lex is caught up and tied as well at 28. Clark is still at 20. Chloe is still at 16. Jonathan Kent is still at 14. Martha's still at 9. Lois still at 5. And Lionel Luther still at 4. Total number of times someone goes to the hospital. We are now at 108 with Lex going there for treatment after his gunshot wound by ex-Deputy Flynn. So looking at the main cast, Lana has been to the hospital 10 times, Jonathan 9, Chloe 8, Lex Luthor now 7, Lionel Luthor 5, Martha 5, Clark 4, and Lois just the once. And the total number of times Clark tells or shows someone other than his forever crush Lana or the destined love of his life, Lois Lane, his powers and abilities. I'm saying 107, though he doesn't actually show anybody this episode, but I feel like the show told us that in this episode, the sheriff knows or suspects so much that it's as if she knows.